This is WABF 1480. It's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by an anonymous donor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Lori. What a beautiful morning.
Yes.
Day before Mardi Gras. Everything's looking good. Except there was an incident in New Orleans at the Bacchus Parade where one person was killed and five were injured in a shooting.
That's horrible.
Yes. I mean, it is. I mean, it's just, I'm certainly glad that we haven't had any incidents like that in Mobile. But the reality is, you know, it is what it is. Well, listen, folks. I've been every Monday. In February, there's been this crazy crisis of some sort: the Chinese balloon, then the unidentified balloons, and so it's kind of driven what we're trying to talk about. Okay, and of course we know that February is Black History Month, and it really began as Black History Week. Back in 1926, Professor Woodson began this, okay? So it's one of these things that I have wanted to be able to use the time on the radio show to talk about Black History Month, okay? Unfortunately, we haven't had a chance to do that. And, of course, the critical race theory people say, well, you're just a racist. You really don't want to talk about Black history. And this is just another manifestation of how disingenuous you people, conservatives, are. So let me just quickly answer that. You know, I personally have wanted to be able to do this, and I'm going to do it. And I'm going to do it in February because it's symbolically important to talk about Black history during Black History Month, okay? So, having kind of answered the CRT type folks, here's what we're going to do this morning. Many of you who have listened to this show and who come to our meetings, Common Sense Campaign meetings, know George Williams, okay? And George is a friend of mine, and he is a long-term, you know, advocate for understanding what is going on in the Black community in terms of trying to move that community forward, okay? As a leading member of the Alabama GOP, he is the head of one of the minority affairs committees. He's a retired Army major. He's a retired DEA special agent. He's also a Marine Corps veteran from Vietnam. So George brings a wealth of experience and understanding to the question of Black History Month. And so
he is a Black man. Not that that's supposed to matter in today's society, but that brings his perspective into view.
Well, of course, yes. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that, Lori, but obviously, you know, the white boy sitting here talking about Black history, that's one thing. But hearing about Black history from the perspective of a Black man whose parents left Mobile because of segregation to go up to, you know, Paterson, New Jersey. That's his story. So I do think that George's perspective on this is going to be something that we really should hear, and I'm really glad that he's going to be able to be on this morning. And Lori just now tells me that George is on. Hey, George, good morning.
Morning.
Well, listen, I just finished introducing you as I normally do, and you've got a full range of experiences that mean a whole lot to me in terms of your ability to take your experiences as a Black man whose parents fled Mobile's segregation, to being a Black Marine in Vietnam, as a DEA agent, as a retired Marine major in the Army Reserve, as a former policeman. All of those things to me, you know, give you the authority to speak about this whole question of Black history, okay? And I think that,
right,
as I said in my introduction, you know, this has been a crazy month, and I haven't been able to get to this topic as quickly as I wanted to, but we're going to talk about it today, George. So thank you for coming on. I'm looking forward to a really good discussion on a topic that needs a full range of opinions to fully come to grips with where we are with Black history and the degree to which we're either making progress or we're not making progress in dealing with the problems within the Black community. Do you think that's a fair statement, George?
Oh, I think it's a very fair statement.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's just kind of look carefully at some of the issues that we have to deal with, okay? And I think that one of them has to be the degree to which critical race theory and the 1619 Project have really created a fundamental attack on what Dr. King did in terms of bringing about the Civil Rights Revolution of 64 and 65. I mean, can you just kind of give me your sense of, you know, what the CRT systemic racism argument has done in terms of what you're trying to do to reach out to, you know, the Black community to move them towards a more conservative Republican approach to politics?
Well, first of all, I thank you for inviting me on. And I think this critical race theory, I call it critical racist theory, okay?
Yeah.
Because it really has, to me, has nothing to do with the races as far as we know. And Dr. King was talking about. And I don't believe in this critical race theory being taught in schools or in any place. I think it's a divide, and it's something that was developed and created by the Democratic Party, to further divide this country and solidify their position as with the voters, especially the Black voters. So I don't believe in it.
Well, let's examine some of the things that the CRT people, and you and I have spoken at different places about CRT and this whole 1619 Project. Let's start with the 1619 Project, which attempts to portray the American founding in 1619 when the first slaves were brought. It's interesting to note that critics of Hannah Jones, who wrote 1619 and received a Pulitzer Prize with it, a Black female historian corrected her on this, basically saying those first slaves did not come as, quote, slaves, they were indentured servants. Now, that may very well be a note of history, okay? I get that. But nevertheless, it's interesting to see that right from the get-go, the 1619 Project misses some important things. And so the question about whether or not 1619 represents the real social history of this country, you know, the foundation of the whole premise is on very shaky grounds just from that particular point. What's your sense of that, George?
Well, I think I think that theory is just a theory, and it's really irrelevant to me. It's irrelevant because nobody, very few people pay attention to it and follow it. So I don't even, I just think it's something that was created by a few people. And just like, for example, African-Americans, okay, the name African-Americans, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, and those guys after the death of Martin Luther King, that was their thing, and they wanted to be known as that, okay? I consider myself a Black American. I'm a Black guy. I'm a Black man. I'm not an African American.
Right.
Okay. I'm not from Africa. I was born in America, and I knew nothing about Africa. The only reason I do is I was assigned there for 6 years with the U.S. government. Okay. Well, otherwise, I wouldn't know nothing about it. Even Native Americans. Both of my great grandmothers and grandmothers were Indians. So I say American Indians instead of Native Americans, you know. So that those are terminologies that were created by these black, I call them black radicals. So that, that's my point on it.
Well, I mean, the question of black radicals is exactly what we're dealing with BLM. I mean, the people who founded it were Marxists, and they understand quite well that, you know, the racial animosities, if they are fostered, are going to create more divisions in this country, and that's going to undermine the whole idea of trying to, you know, work together for a brighter future, which again was the king, you know, dream. And I think that, you know, when you start looking into the specifics of what the 1619 Project has said, it becomes one of these issues that we have to counter it. And unfortunately, there are people within the black community, some of these really right left-wing professors like Kendi from Columbia and others, who are exploiting the fascination with, you know, Hannah Jones and the New York Times 1619 Project. And what they're doing is injecting all of this false history. I mean, one of the key tenets that they talk about, George, is the idea that 1776 is not the real founding, it's 1619. Okay. And yet, you know, if that's really true, then everything that has followed since 1776 is a lie. That's what they're saying. And so I guess my question to you is, you know, how do we actually take this on within the black community, especially since the 1619 Project has been injected into over 2,000 school systems? I mean, they're propagating this lie, and it is designed to divide. So, I mean, what is your sense of how we together, blacks and whites of conservative persuasion, can effectively work within the black community to try to, you know, mitigate the damage that's being done?
Well, one thing we have to do, okay? We have to tell our own story. And we have to go in those communities and tell our own story. We can't rely on the Democrats to tell our stories because they lie. They will lie, they lie, they lie, and they lie. And what we call, especially black Republicans, we call the urban areas the Democrat plantation, okay? And that's what we call them. But I think with that project, 1619 Project, it's really not that relevant. I don't think it's around. I think it's a few people trying to initiate that into the school and the curriculum. But if we keep telling them no, and we talk to the Board of Education and the parents, I think we'll wipe them out. I really do. That's just like me being a black Republican. I'm calling Uncle Tom and a racist and all that. But I tell my own story, so I've convinced a lot of black Democrats that this is not what we are. This is not what we're all about. So we have to have some guts and tell our own story. And we can't allow the Democrats to do that. And we know this whole project is a lie. So that's what we do. We call them a lie.
Well, George, I think that, you know, at least in Alabama, there is the sense that the lie has been revealed. And the degree to which the system has basically banned CRT and all the rest of that, that's all to the good. But what we have discovered, though, is that the lies are injected into the system through the back door. And so in our analysis of, say, the Studies Weekly, I mean, it's a woke document. It's a materials that supports CRT and all the rest of that. And we found out through our South Baldwin chapter and the education group that's working with them that's exactly what's happening. And in Baldwin County, and actually 12 other states have it, and they're basically using these kinds of woke documents in the 4th, 5th, and 6th grade as essential history. So I think that, you know, while it's true that these things can be irrelevant, there's a certain danger that we're seeing these things being put into the system, and we're having a hard time getting it out, you know, George. And I think that perhaps, as you know, as part of the GOP's, you know, minority affairs group, that if you and others can bring this to the attention of the committee, your executive committee, which has a meeting here pretty soon, that somewhere along the line the GOP has got to be able to understand and recognize that they are stealing, you know, everything that you believe in and turning it upside down. I mean, do you think that that's possible, that this next meeting you all can, as part of the minority affairs group that's in Alabama, bring that to the forefront, that people in the ALGOP executive committee will actually do something about it?
Well, I don't know. I really don't know. I think if we call them liars and tell them that this is not, this should not be the curriculum in our school system, and if we got board members on the Board of Education statewide as well as county boards, then we can counter that. And I think we should also get some of these well-known black radios talk show and do a commercial and put those on the air. Okay, this is how we do outreach and we dispel the lies that the Democrats are telling. So we need to do more like that. Okay, do 1 minute commercials on these well-known black radio stations in all of the larger metropolitan areas in Alabama. This is what we need to do. And that's what I was trying to get the Republican Party to do when we have candidates advertised on these black, well-known radio stations, okay?
Well, George, let me ask you this. Can we possibly put together a list of these radio stations and radio personalities, black personalities, who we could go to with commercials? Because I think, you know, and I know that we discussed this when I had you on for the Martin Luther King birthday discussion, that at the recent election in Mobile with Vivian Figures against Pete Rehm, that you thought that Pete really needed to do more with getting his commercials into the black community through the radio stations. So I guess my point here is, we still have a couple of weeks before the meeting on February 24th. Why don't we put together this list of people, commercials, and I mean people who are, you know, who are important radio personalities within the black community, and start raising some money to do exactly that? I mean, do you think we can do that?
Well, it's not a matter of black personalities. It's a matter of people who listen to the black music, okay?
Yeah.
Which is very large. And do commercials regarding this so that the people can hear it so many times a day, Luke. You know what I mean?
Yes.
This is what we can do, create commercials for that purpose and collect money to pay for those commercials.
Well, once again, we get back to the willingness of ALGOP to move in this direction, but it seems to me that if the proposal is made, then they're almost, you know, they have to support it in some way, otherwise it doesn't look very good. It's just like you've said before, you know, there have to be more black faces on the select committee. So, you know, here we have an opportunity to have you get on that committee by winning the district chair for District 1 and 2 down here. So I think that, you know, this question of putting together a plan, it makes sense in my view to try to, you know, I don't want to say force, but maybe it is, force them to deal with the need to spend money to win people over. I mean, that's kind of it.
Look, let me stop you. I think if that's the case, you're talking about ALGOP, then you should have the chairman of the ALGOP on this station and to ask him that question, because he's the person in charge of the Alabama Republican Party.
Okay.
And the National Committee man, Paul Reynolds, and the National Committee woman, Vicki Drummond. They're the ones that control the purse. I've had difficulty trying to get them to support black Republican candidates, you know. The new chairman, John Wall, has done that. So that's a good thing. And so they control the purse. They collect the money, they control the purse, and they could put these spots on the radios in at least the five large metropolitan areas in Alabama.
Right. Well, let me ask you this, just in terms of, you know, the election system here, it seems like you were able to help Ken Pascal become the first black Republican in the state house, and he was elected within a white majority district. I mean, what is your sense in terms of the acceptance of the Republican message within the black community?
Very low.
It's low.
Very, very, very low. You know, we got Kenny Pascal, and he was on my program for quite a few times, and we raised money for him. Even some folks from South Alabama went up to Shelby County to help him.
Right.
And he won that race, okay? And remember, now he's the first one in, 150 years? To be elected in the Alabama legislature, or we have no black Republicans in the Senate, and he's the only black Republican in the Alabama House. So, you know, take it from there.
All right, so do we have any candidates for, well, did we have any black candidates running for a Senate position this last election?
I think we had one, but we had about eight people, blacks, running, and we got no one on the state level elected. So, you know, and at one time when I was student vice chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, we had 15, and we got none because we didn't get any support from the party for them. So that discouraged a lot of folks. Not the party.
Well, I mean, doesn't that really take you down the road then that there's this residual racism that's still in the Republican Party here, or is there something else going on?
Well, Alabama is a red state, and a lot of the leadership in the Alabama Republican Party feel that we're in a good position right now, okay? And we are, but remember, Georgia was the same way. Pennsylvania was the same way. Even where I left here when I was 10 and went to New Jersey, even New Jersey was a red state. New York was a red state. Arizona was a red state. Michigan was a red state. Illinois was a red state. And now look, they're all blue.
Well, I mean,
things can change.
Well, I mean, see, where this kind of leads you, though, is that your interpretation basically is that there's the status quo is where it is, and they're happy with that. They don't see the need to go beyond where they are, making sure that they can control things. Whereas another interpretation would say there's this residual racism that's preventing that. So you seem to be in the camp that says they're kind of stupid, they're making a big mistake, because bad things can happen if you don't reach out to everyone else. That's basically where you are with this then.
Well, my idea is I talk to the Alabama voters and Alabama Republicans, and I want them to realize that they can't do this by themselves. And every day I fight for the Republican Party. I recruit folks, not just minorities for the Republican Party, but all races of people into the Republican Party. And as you know, over the last, 5 days, I've been up to Geneva to speak. I've been up to Enterprise, and I've been up to, how do you call it, Eufaula?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, and to tell you the truth, Dr. Lou, ever since I came back to Alabama in the end of 2005, I have not encountered any racial discrimination by white folk.
Right.
I've encountered it by blacks, but not by whites. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's why I'm fighting the NAACP and some of these other organizations, the Democratic Party, who use this as a recruiting tool to say that Alabama is a racist state and all that. And they're using it as a recruiting tool, and unfortunately, quite a few blacks listen to them, and they're still voting the Democrat. But we're getting a lot of young, when I say young, I mean 35 and below, who are part of our organization, the Alabama Minority GOP. So, slowly but for surely, we're winning.
Well, I mean, you know, this freedom movement that's within the younger black generation, according to Sunny Johnson, a, you know, black activist, Tea Party person. She's got a radio show on Black Breitbart that comes on Saturday and Sundays, and she makes the point that within the younger generation, they have embraced capitalism and an opportunity society. But translating that into effective, you know, vote getting and people who are going to vote for Republican candidates, you know, seems to be still a problem. And we get back to this question of, you know, systemic racism. How do you have systemic racism when you've got blacks in charge of all the big cities in the nation? And so the question of systemic racism seems to just kind of hover over every discussion, and yet the reality seems to be completely different. I mean, so I guess from my perspective, trying to, you know, analyze what's going on with you trying to recruit blacks, are you finding that there's a receptive, you know, that people that you talk to are receptive to the idea of capitalism and freedom moving forward?
Well, you know, when you talk to an organization, you don't talk about capitalism and freedom, okay?
Yeah.
You talk about what is important to them and in their neighborhoods. And I find that in talking to some of these individuals, I usually go to the pastors and the ministers.
Yeah.
Okay? Because for 400 years, the black survival was based around the churches, okay? And it's still that way. It's still that way. And I talked to the ministers, and the ministers have a lot of influence in their community.
Right.
And so when we have... And another thing, with Governor Raleigh, when we traveled with him, we set up meetings with black ministers, Governor Bentley. We set up meetings. It got a lot of black weapons. Okay? Now, you have to understand, in black communities, it is difficult for black Republicans to put signs in front of their homes or say that they are Republicans, because they're some of them being intimidated by folks. Democrats in that area. I've been threatened by Democrats, okay? And I've been called a racist, I've been called a Uncle Tom, and that's the problem. So, but we have quite a few blacks voting for Republican candidates, but we have to get Republicans voting for a black Republican candidates, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, I mean, I know that that's a challenge in terms of trying to find the right candidate in the right place. Certainly, Ken Pascal is a notable exception because you were able to do that. But you know, if the recruiting issue goes away and you find the good candidates, then you've got to find the money. So I mean, what are the prospects for all that, George? And I guess I'm kind of honing in on this because it seems like if you're going to have, you know, fundamental change, then you've got to have a combination of things happen. You've got to have a good candidate, and you've got to be able to fund that candidate, and the candidate's got to have the right message. So I guess from the Minority Affairs, you know, perspective as an organization, are you all, I mean, since we just went through a major election, are you now starting to, you know, find the right candidates for the next go-round?
Dr. Lou, there's no such thing, you know, talking about the right candidates. We had the right candidates, okay, who were running. They just did not get the funding and the financial support. Now, you have to understand, the black Republicans are not going to get the funding from the Democrats in their community. So they have to rely on the Republicans to help fund them.
Right.
And we have a lot of good, qualified candidates, and a lot of them have left the party because they did not get the support from the Republican Party. Okay?
In the past.
That's the thing that we need to, I'm trying to get the Republican Party to realize. And the two past chairmen always went by, well, we look at the polls. You're not going to get any polls in the black community like that. Okay? They base their financial supports on the polls that they get. And we would tell them, no, it's not like that. No, let's support them. I've taken thousands of dollars out of my pocket. We're aware of that. But not only did I support black candidates, I support the Senate candidate, and House candidate, and Secretary of State candidate, you know, the governor candidate. So, now, they're disappointed now, and we're trying to get the party to support these candidates. Unfortunately, for Kenny Pascal, we did get the chairman to give him a couple $1,000. And then we have the minority GOP. We have our meeting, and we try to do fundraisers to help minority candidates.
Right. So, well, I mean, let's just take a quick look at one of the candidates for Secretary of State this past time was, I think, Mr. Horn. He was from the Huntsville area. I heard him speak at Eastern Shore Women, and I mean to tell you, he's a crackerjack candidate. He didn't win in the Secretary of State's, you know, race. But let me ask you, did you get a chance to meet him when he was down here campaigning?
Remember now, I know Chris Warren. He's a member of the Alabama Minority GOP.
Okay, so does he have, I mean, is he someone that you would consider to be a viable candidate for some office up in his area in Huntsville?
Well, I hope he will. I hope he's not discouraged.
Well, I mean, I guess...
I'll be talking to him when we have our meeting. We got the Alabama Minority GOP annual banquet fundraiser in April in Birmingham. So, you know, we are hoping we can get the support. Last April, we had it in Mobile, and we got very little support from the Republican Party for that fundraiser and banquet. Okay? It was in Mobile. And matter of fact, we lost money on it.
Yeah.
So, what can we say?
Well, I guess I was just trying to illustrate that, you know, that there are good black candidates out there, and that it certainly gives a lie to the Democrats that, you know, the only people that they can turn to are black Democrats, you know. And I think that that's one of the things that can be brought out. And you know, work in your favor. But as you say, there's a financial component to it, and I guess one of the things that we can do is try to figure out a way to, you know, underwrite your next meeting in Birmingham and figure out how you can just, you know, go forward with a profit from that, and not have to worry about the, you know.
Well, we got very little support for our annual banquet in Mobile this past April, okay?
Yeah.
Very little. Yep. And what little money we had in our treasury, we lost a lot of it. And fortunately, the governor candidate, she gave $5,000 to the minority GOP, and that helped us out a lot. But other than that, that was it.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, here again, we're trying to look at things from 30,000 feet above, and what you're ending up getting here is that money is really going to tell the tale, and how this money is raised for good candidates seems to be the real issue. I mean, is that a fair statement?
Say that again, though.
That when we're looking at the problems that conservative black candidates are dealing with, the issues aren't necessarily, I'm not going to vote for you because you're a black, okay? Ken Pascal wins in a majority white area, okay? So that's an issue that gets taken off the table. But a...
Well, I have to stop you there. That all depends. I mean, you know, if there's one Republican, say if we get a black Republican to win the primary, and that black Republican is running against a Democrat, okay, and that Republican loses, and he doesn't get, you know, all the Republican voters in that area, what is that?
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean...
It's twofold.
Well, again, then, you're still back to the question of making sure you have enough money to deal with the typical race issues. I mean, you know, every political race costs some money. I mean, you saw that with Pete, you saw that with... You know, with every other person that we supported, some of whom won, some of whom did not win. Okay, but if money becomes the central issue for you, then it seems like there has to be a coordinated effort, starting at the top, like you say with John Wall, that this is going to be a priority, and they can make that happen. And I guess what I'm suggesting is that the degree to which that actually can go forward comes in part when you all are meeting next week and you raise this issue, you know, as part of the agenda. I mean, is that something that you all are planning?
We've raised this issue so many times, okay? And we will continue to raise that. But I like to raise the issue privately. I've talked to you know, leadership in the Alabama Republican Party. I've talked to John, I've talked to committee man, national committee woman, and some of the vice chairs. Okay?
Yeah.
But you also must have the Republican voters. That's important. Okay? So you've got both elements there. That's why I say it's twofold, because you need to get the financial, and then you need to get the votes. I mean, fortunately, up in Shelby County for Kenny Pascal, which is about 65% white, he ran against four other white Republicans in the primary, and he won it. So, you know, they did that in Shelby County.
But that's a testament to the idea that you don't necessarily have to be white or black to represent your district. You just have to be a good candidate, and you've got a good message and you've got the money to get the message out.
Well, we've had some good candidates, but they didn't have the money and they didn't win.
Well, I mean, that's that does... I mean, you see, this discussion, though, takes you out of the realm of race being an issue as much as other factors, which, you know, in my view, kind of supports the whole argument that King made 60 years ago, okay? I have a dream. Well, to a certain degree, if you look at it, the glass is half full, that dream has become part and parcel of the fabric of society. You've had a social revolution, more marriages, you know, interracial marriages. You've had a political revolution with black mayors, black chiefs of police, black congressmen, black senators. You have all of that. So it seems to me that on the face of it, the argument that CRT people and their adherents are making are absolutely false. And that should be to our advantage when we're trying to move forward with getting more black candidates here in Alabama. I mean, does that make sense?
Well, it's not CRT is not only false, but it's immaterial. Okay, and you look at the black. When I was a young black in Mobile and Daphne, before my family moved up to New Jersey, in the black communities, there were a lot of stores, gas stations owned by blacks, and other businesses, beauty shops and barber shops, and they're all gone, not just about, except the barber shops and the hairdressing, the beauty shops, okay?
Yeah.
Even the supply for black beauty supply is not owned by blacks anymore. And the neighborhood stores, they don't have them anymore. And that's what we're telling the black voters. You're in the urban cities, you're in the ghetto, and you have no black businesses. And one guy told me, an older black individual, he said, this Equal Rights Bill was the worst thing in the world for blacks. And I said, what do you mean? And then he outlined what I just showed you.
Uh-huh.
He said, it used to be between black and white. That's what Martin Luther King was talking about. But then when they passed the Civil Rights Bill, they included about 130 other different groups. So if you look in the black communities, you have Asians, you have the Southeast Asian Indians, okay? And they own a lot of the business, the Vietnamese, and now the illegals. So, and he told me that blacks right now are at the bottom of the totem pole, okay, because of this civil rights bill. And now, you know, with 130-some different races under the civil rights bill, the blacks have lost out. And it's about time they realize that and stop voting for the Democrats.
Yeah, but you see what's happening with that, though. That's an argument for equity, okay? And that confounds, you know, where we're trying to go in terms of, you know, moving forward along the lines of the King, equal opportunity, race doesn't matter. I mean, I'm not sure how your that discussion that you had leads to any other conclusion other than that there has to be government interference in this to give, you know, local blacks an opportunity to own stores again. I mean,
well, President Trump did an outstanding job with the his urban initiatives. He did outstanding, which Obama didn't do. And which Biden is not doing, okay?
Yeah.
You know, with Dr. Ben Carson.
Yeah, Carson really led that.
Enterprise zones, et cetera, et cetera. That was
right.
President Trump's initiative through Dr. Ben Carson, but Biden wiped that out, he and Harris, okay? They wiped that out. So I don't know, Doc Lou. It's very confusing, but I think the number one thing is to get the black voters in those urban cities and the urban surroundings to know, to realize that the Democratic Party is nothing, is no good for the communities. Okay? And I think if we educate them on that and bring more and more over, and we're doing that with the younger group from 35 on down, 40 on down. So we're doing that, but we got to put more emphasis on PR, public relations in those communities via radio and TV.
Well, let me ask you this, George. You have an opportunity here in Chicago in about 10 days. Mayor Lightfoot is up, and I think up for re-election, and she's got a couple of black challengers. I mean, I know Chicago's a long way from here, but are any of our, you know, Alabama GOP people, white or black, minority affairs or not, is anyone looking to help the black candidates against Lightfoot? Because I mean, she represents everything that's, and you talk about the Democrats lying. Well, here's a person who not only lies about everything, but she's just stepped back from protecting her own people from the criminal element. I mean, it's just like the terrorists own Chicago. So I mean, is it possible at this point for you to tell us whether or not anyone here in Alabama has reached out to those conservative black candidates running against Lightfoot?
No, and it would be unfair for us to do that. That would come from the RNC, okay? Yeah. Now, Ron Priebus was the former chairman before the current chairman, and he did an outstanding job. You know, he selected me on the National Alabama Outreach Committee, and he was outstanding at doing that kind of work. Okay, so it's up to the Republicans in that state, the Republican Party, to get behind the candidates in Chicago, and support that candidate against her, because she is horrible.
Oh, she is.
I mean,
she's
they're going to vote against her. So, you know, that's the way it is.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that she is the epitome of what we're talking about in terms of Democrats who lie, get their power, and then just don't do anything to help the people that
elect them. There are several mayors like that. Baltimore, New York,
right.
Los Angeles, and those Democratic strongholds, okay? There's several of them.
Well, I mean, you know, we focused on the politics of this. What about on the educational front? Is there anything moving in the right direction in terms of education so that we can see, you know, and again, trying to get rid of 1619 out of the curriculum? We've accomplished that here in Alabama, but we have not gotten rid of Common Core, and that means that, you know, all of the negative things that are part and parcel of CRT, as I said earlier, with Studies Weekly, you have all of this woke stuff that is just infecting, you know, people's minds in a way that just takes them down a radical left road. And it seems like, you know, in your discussions with the minority affairs folks here in Alabama, are they concerned about what's going on in education?
Some of them are.
Yeah,
and some of them are not. Okay, but I think if we did a concerted effort by the GOP and the leadership, and we start advertising on those black radio stations and in those urban areas, and let them know our feelings on it, I think we'll get a lot farther than what we've gotten.
Well, George, you know, we've spent, you know, a good part of this hour, you know, covering some of these issues, and I think is there anything in particular that you want to bring up that we haven't covered before I run out of time and Lori hits the plug on me?
No, I appreciate talking to you and your audience about this. You know, you and I have traveled to some parts of the state, and we've talked about this, and that's what we've got to do. We've got to tell our story. And we've got to confront the Democrat. This is a Democratic Party, and the left-wing group of the Democratic Party, which is the NAACP,
yeah,
which was founded by a white female to help the blacks in 1909.
Right.
Okay, and they are nationally surrogates of the Alabama and of the Democratic Party. So we've got to keep calling them lies and talking against what they're trying to do, and that's what I've been doing for all these years.
And I know you continue to do it on your radio show too.
Oh yeah, yeah. And Lou, I think it's very important. You were a guest on my last radio show, and we had a young lady, and I don't know who she is, but she was telling us about being on the black chat station, where quite a few of the younger Democrats saying they don't want Biden, they don't want Harris, they want to see a Republican back in into the presidency. And do you remember that conversation I
yeah,
had with her?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and people should go back and listen to that conversation. I think it's very important.
Well, it goes back to what we said earlier, that there is within the younger black generation a movement towards freedom and capitalism, equal opportunity society. And I think that certainly is a healthy, you know, balance to the obvious far left BLM, you know, movement, which wants to destroy the country and impose its own, you know, ideological Marxist approach to politics. So, I think that that was an important, you know, discussion that you had with that young lady. And perhaps, you know what, George, when we get off the air, we can talk about maybe getting her to call into this show. You know, soon, okay?
Yeah, yeah. She said she would call back because she's going to find out from the folks on the chat stations who would they prefer to run for the presidency. And I asked her once she find that out to, you know, call us on my next show so we can see what their thoughts are.
Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that one. George, thank you so much for coming on today. I know that you know, you've got a lot going on getting ready for the GOP meeting on the 24th. So let's stay in touch. In fact, are you going to be able to come to our meeting tonight?
No, I'm a guest speaker at the Escambia County Republican Committee meeting tonight.
Oh, Lord. Look up. Well, good luck on that, and be safe in your travels.
More.
Okay. All right, George. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you, Doc.
Bye-bye. Bye. Well, folks, you know, the whole question of what's going on within the black community is not just some abstract idea that, you know, oh, well, it's out there and whatever happens, happens, and we can't do anything about it. I think that's the wrong way to look at this. I think that the degree to which we all have a stake in stopping BLM is in part generated from, you know, our own desires to make sure that this country does not go down the wrong path. But it also should be, you know, part of our Christian approach to other people. You know, treat people the way you wanted to be treated, that sort of thing. I think that our concerns for making sure that the black community is stable, progressing, free from crime. I mean, this business with Lori Lightfoot and these people in these cities, Portland and the rest of these Democrat mayors, they're letting the criminals run wild. That's an outrage. You know, we can't just sit by and watch that kind of stuff happen and think, oh, it's okay, it's not us. The hell with that. We need to do as much as we can through our elected officials to make sure that every American has the kind of safety at home that we do down here, you know? And maybe that's a bridge too far in some ways. I get that. But some of these people up in Washington need to have their heads straightened out a little bit, and that's where we come in as grassroots. We need to keep them in the game and watching what's really happening and making sure that the bad things are stopped. And if they can't do that, the hell with them, and get somebody else up there. It's that simple. And on that note, Lori's giving me the high sign. I'm going to say au revoir.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week. Have a great Mardi Gras. Be safe out there. And we'll talk to you on next Monday.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor and by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of this program or want to tell a friend, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com. This is WABF Mobile Fairhope. Great music and memories.